Hi, you're listening to another sermon from Deep Creek Anglican Church.
Good morning. Today's reading is from Exodus 2, verse 23 through to chapter 3. During that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and the cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that through the bush was a fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people to the Israelites out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, What is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am, has sent me to you. This is the word of the Lord.
When I was studying medicine way back when, I was thinking about maybe becoming a psychiatrist. And I think people sometimes are drawn to psychiatry in that if they're already in that kind of profession because they themselves may know that they have some needs in that area. They are often a little different, odd. Psychiatrists are kind of, you know, they match their profession in a way. That may give you an insight into me, maybe. But I think too, for me choosing or being chosen by God and that kind of interplay of those things, going into ministry, there's something about ministry that feeds me, that I get to choose to explore certain areas that I need to know about. That along with you, I am growing and learning and being shaped by God and having my questions and my doubts. And I'm just lucky that I get to kind of set these sermon series and say, oh, I'm going to address some of those things in the midst of my needs. And so as we come to Christmas and we say things like, we celebrate Emmanuel, God with us, and that we're going to meet Jesus and that we're waiting for Jesus. I thought, what does it mean for people to encounter God? What has it been like for people over the centuries, over the millennia? What have they actually learnt about God? How has he revealed himself to them when they have encountered him? And so at Christmas time, when we're like, you know, what if God was one of us? And we're like, that was for you. And we're thinking, oh, you know, God being with us. What is that like? When we're encouraged to encounter God, and we know that life is never as it should be until we have met God, what can we expect to find? And so I went back into the Old Testament and wanted to see these kind of moments, key moments when people had met God. And I, a couple of weeks ago, talked to you about Abraham. And this is not in our Advent series, but, you know, I was kind of just extending it again, another perk of the job. These are the three visitors, and this is Rublev's 14th century icon. These encounters with God actually have really captured the artistic imagination. And so we see this moment where these visitors, kind of the angel of the Lord, God himself, comes to Abraham, and they make these promises. And it's this moment of both intimacy and future assurance. And then last week we met Jacob, who in running away from his family had an encounter with God in a dream where he saw a ladder or a stairway. And speaking of capturing the artistic imagination, this is a painting by William Blake of the "And Did Those Feet in Ancient Times" fame. It's very gracious, isn't it? It's kind of when he saw the angels descending and ascending. They weren't doing what I... Do you remember last week? It's all right if you weren't here. Beck, you'll get it. The angels were the royal messengers bringing things out of heaven, making sure that the work was being done and bringing the reports back. So maybe William Blake's graciousness kind of didn't capture the essence of what that encounter was really about, but I think this modern piece, as Jacob is sleeping, feeling like he's nowhere with nothing, fire. This ladder of bringing heaven to earth and earth to heaven, and he's terrified. He wakes up and he says, wasn't that a beautiful image, so gracious? No, God was in this place and I did not know it. God was at work behind the scenes, a picture of intimacy, yes, like Abraham, and future promise too. And so these first encounters for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were about experiencing or encountering a God who was able to be met, who could be with them, but more than that, who promised a new future. Now, this is the final image I'm showing today of the ladder. And I like this one. It's a modern Jewish depiction. You can see the letters of the Hebrew alphabet there. You can start to see, you can see the angel wings. You can start to see the way in which these promised encounters are going to move into the next season of the people of Israel. And so you can see down the bottom a little golden calf, and you can see up near the top a burning bush. So there were 400 years between Joseph in Egypt and Moses encountering God in the burning bush. That wouldn't have been easy. 400 years after these recorded encounters where promises had been made, and suddenly the people of God who are living in Egypt find themselves the enemy. So they've been in Egypt, they've been flourishing under Joseph, who was a Hebrew person and who had been appointed as a leader there and was actually making things really great for Egypt. And alongside that, was great for the people of God, for the Hebrew people, for the Israelites. They were flourishing and they were increasing in number. But you and I know what happens when an ethnic group within a nation starts to increase in number and leaders feel threatened. Persecution happens. And in this case, there was genocide of the babies to really extinguish the entire nation to remove the next generation. And there was enslavement. Still happens, of course, today. I mean, you can think of around the world people groups that are being targeted and they're seen as a threat. Well, this is the situation for the Israelites. They are the Rohingyas or the Yazidis. And so Moses, who's grown up in the palace, long story, you can read it. Actually, it's only like a couple of chapters, you get it. Wishes that he could do something about this. But now he's an old man, much older, I'd say, than this little depiction. I mean, he's probably about 80. Now, there was a lot of clean living, I'm sure, and he was still a very vibrant, healthy man. And he had another 40 years or more of ministry after this. But really, after these promises and these encounters in his history, 400 years. And then fire. That mosaic really was cute, but it doesn't capture what it must have been like to be literally just going about your business day by day, and then suddenly fire. And not a fire that you have to quickly run and put it out or get the sheep out of the way. Something different. Something different about this one. And so he approaches as the bush is not actually burning up. And God speaks to him out of the fire. And Chantel already read that to us. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place you are standing is holy ground. Why fire? Well, Phoebe's just come back in from kids' church, so she can tell us if I'm telling the truth. But fire is both comforting and attractive and terrifying. It draws us to it. You know, we want to make s'mores, right? Get the marshmallows, and in our household, it's Oreos. You know, getting ready for some sort of diabetic coma. You want to have it. You want to have a fire on at night. You want to, you know, it's wonderful. And yet, well, Phoebe brought home something that she'd written at school, which said, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be the tooth fairy. Where did that come from? And another, you know, your favorite this and your favorite that. What's your biggest fear, it said. And she wrote, my house burning down. Fire can be terrifying. You and I know in the midst of this place in summer, I mean, I live over the other side of the river and that's even worse. Some of you guys are in North Warrandyte. Can be terrifying. And so why not fire for this God who is both attractive and comforting and essential for life? I mean, not just making marshmallows. You're not going to live as long as Moses eating marshmallows. But really to keep you warm, to just enable you to survive. But then over here, destructive, consuming, terrifying.
deadly. This is God.
Now, this is a 17th century French depiction, and you can see the artist has tried to both capture that fire, but also then you've got sort of God there. And he's more accessible, maybe, but this I like. Because in it, you kind of get the picture that this is a bush that is on fire and yet not burning up. Now, why is that important? In this encounter with God, what do we learn from God about himself when the bush is not burning up? We learn that God is all-sustaining in himself, that he needs nothing external to himself to be who he is. Imagine if it was the other way. If we had a bush and it was God and it was burning up, well, it would one day be gone, and it would be dependent on the fuel that the bush was providing for the fire. This fire, God needs no fuel. He is completely full in himself. He needs nothing from you or I to be who he is. He is completely self-sustaining. And so when Moses asks him what his name is, then it all comes together. Now, obviously, you know, when we get to know someone, we like to get to know their name, and it's a mark of intimacy. That's not all that's happening here. Moses is being sent by God to Egypt to speak to Pharaoh and to kind of bring his people together and then out. And it's been 400 years. And they do believe in God. You know, Moses' father-in-law was a priest. But 400 years and things start to kind of get a little blurry, and you've brought in some Egyptian gods, and maybe you've start to, you know, think about, well, it didn't take long for them to get the golden calf, right? There's some stuff in the corporate consciousness that Moses wants to know, which one are you? If I come to them and say the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they're going to want to see how this, well, we think it's this one. Well, actually, the Egyptians have Ra and Isis and whatever, and, you know, maybe it's the same. And so Moses wants to know which one, the name. But there's also some authority and power when you know a name. Like if you're a school teacher and you can go, boom, Pritha, like there's some power in that. If you're like, you, Les, which was me because I had every class in the junior school. So, yes, you, darling. If you know a name, and then spiritually in the ancient world, if you knew a name, even more authority. So we see when Jesus spoke to the evil spirits, there was a, what is your name? And so Moses both wants to kind of say, which one are you? And I'd like to have a little authority and kind of power in this situation. I'd like to know your name, please. And God replies with this, these four Hebrew letters, Yahweh. Now, we translate it, I am who I am, or sometimes I will be who I will be, or I was who I will be, or I am. And that's because this is really just the Hebrew verb to be. So when we're learning grammar in English, you know, I am, you are, they will be, all of that. God says to Moses, forget about all those names. Forget about thinking you're going to have some sort of power and authority in this relationship. I am the ground of being. Everything about everything is me. And it's not as if I can be named like one of you, like a creation or a being. I am being itself. I find that staggering. This is an ancient text, really ancient, and yet you've got the most amazing, deep, philosophical, mind-blowing, this is revelation. This is God saying, you are looking for a God you can kind of name and categorize. You are encountering the source of all reality. Everything that there is, I am. And even when I say I was and I is to come, it's a I was am. I am. I will be am. I am there now. I am has sent you. And so when you're sent, and actually you have an encounter with the ground of all being, and I wish there was a kind of even better way I could say that, because that feels too small, then you go. Now, the history for the people of Israel was that their God started to be known less about being the ground of being and more about the one who gave the laws. But if you can connect those two, how wonderful. And so this is from St. Catherine's Monastery in the 11th century, where you can see down the bottom there's the burning bush, but he's receiving the law. Now, again, I've said before, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, and the reason I say that to you when I do refer to bits about the Hebrew is that I don't want you to think that the Bible is this mystery that you can't access and that only I can access from the front. You've just set me apart to have more time to read, okay? And so that's my job, is to read, and to tell you, but it's not a mystery. You can learn this too. The word for bush is not the generic word for bush. It's the word seneh in Hebrew. And I'm sure there's probably a better way of saying that. But the reason it's chosen for that particular specific word in this passage is it sounds a lot like Sinai. Seneh, bush, Sinai, where God would give the law. And so for the people of Israel to connect the ground of all being with the way that they then ought to live was very powerful. And yes, that is the case for you and I too. But we mustn't make the mistake of thinking that as soon as God reveals himself and that we encounter God, that he wants us to do something. And isn't that kind of so much about what we do in church? We're like, welcome, meet God. Now, you know, do this, do that, and I'll put you on the roster. Speak to me later if you'd like to go on a roster. But that's the wrong context for when Moses meets God. That's the wrong fire. It's this fire. It's the fire of deliverance. So God says, I have seen, I have heard, I have understood that you are being oppressed. I've seen injustice. And I come to reveal myself to you and for you to encounter me and for me to show exactly who I am for the sake of deliverance, for salvation. Great to connect the ground of all being with laws on how to live. Great. But never do that without connecting the ground of all being, the one in all that all of this exists within, with deliverance, with God's heart to set things right, This is who he is as he gives his name to Moses. It's in the context of salvation and deliverance. All those promises 400 years before, all those encounters that were looking forward to the future. God reveals his name, I am who I am being itself, everything that you have comes from me, and I've heard your cry, and I will deliver you. In the Gospel of John, chapter 8, Jesus is talking to the various Jewish opponents, Pharisees and others, and he says, if I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. My Father, whom you claim as your God, is the one who glorifies me. Though you do not know him, I know him. Your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. You are not yet 50 years old, they said to him, and you have seen Abraham? Very truly, I tell you, Jesus answered, before Abraham was born, I am. Those promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, your descendants will be like, you know, the stars in the sky, the sand on the seashore. You will have a land, you will come into it flowing with milk and honey. Moses encountering God and then experiencing that deliverance. Jesus says, all of that is me. That deliverance lasted a short time in the scheme of things. But God's heart, as you encounter him today in Jesus Christ, is that promises are fulfilled and that you access the ground of all being in the context of salvation and deliverance. Now, the Jews knew that Jesus was saying that because they picked up stones to kill him. Because when you equate yourself with God, that's what happens. And so when Jesus turns up and we celebrate leading to Christmas, this Emmanuel, God with us, that's what's happening. The Yahweh God, the ground of all being, is suddenly here and he is enacting his heart of salvation. Now, it may be that he's calling you to encounter him in that way for the first time. Maybe to encounter him in that way afresh. Or it may be that like Moses, he's calling you into that in order to send you with the message of his heart, deliverance, salvation, justice for the oppressed. Let's take a moment, and I'm going to pray for those three categories, and you might want to kind of, in yourself, raise your own hand. You don't have to do it. You can if you like. Which one of those is you? And will you respond to God today? Almighty God, it seems presumptuous to even name you or speak about you because you are so, you're so beyond our imagining. And that when we speak of you and we sing our songs, we're actually speaking of and to the ground of all being, the truest reality, everything that there is. Outside of time, always am, always present. And so this morning, I want to pray for those who really have never encountered you like this. Who want to say, if you're the ground of all being, I want to know you, I want to be part of that. If that's you, just take a moment. Make your own prayer to God. I want to participate in who you are, God. I want to know you. I want to encounter you. I want my life to be changed because I know where reality is based. But perhaps, God, we just really need to get back into that today. We sort of know it. We've heard your name. We've sung the songs. But our life has not relied on you as the ground of all being, not trusted in you as the one who can do all things and that who will carry us even when things look terribly bleak. That we have not been excited about you because we've had a small picture of you. We felt you were far away instead of realizing that every breath is yours. So if that's you today, just take that moment to lay down your small view, your distant view, and to step into the God who is the ground of all being, the I Am. And finally, God, when we know that you're a God who seeks but who also sends. And Lord, if you are working in us today to say, you are going to be my sent one, to lift the yoke of oppression, to speak out, Lord, impress that upon us today. We will be your people of salvation, redemption, deliverance, justice. And if God's speaking to you in that way today, just have your moment with him. God, would you seal that call? That word that is coming to people here today, Lord, I pray that you would empower it by your Spirit. That just as the promises to the patriarchs came to light, this promise that you would use these people today to bring justice on the earth, that they would come to fruition and we would see it in our time. And we praise you for the privilege of being used in your heart mission of salvation. Amen.